Welcome to the Sports Docs podcast with Dr. Catherine Logan and Dr. Ashley Bassett. On each episode, we chat about the most recent developments in sports medicine and dissect through all the noise so you know which literature should actually impact your practice.
Today, we're coming to you again live from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons annual meeting in Las Vegas, our largest orthopedic conference. If you haven't listened to our first mini episode, what are you waiting for? Go check it out and hear all about the AOS meeting and our special guest, Dr. Brian Waterman. But today, we're just going to dive right into it.
We are supported by Jocko Fuel. Hard work, clean fuel, no excuses.
I've been implementing Jocko Greens into my routine for about a year now. I mix a scoop of Jocko Greens with my sparkling water in the morning. It's a blend of organic greens and superfoods, naturally sweetened with monk fruit and a delicious, really yummy pineapple coconut flavor.
Jocko Fuel has no artificial sweeteners, is responsibly sourced, and has vital probiotics to support gut health. Our listeners can obtain Jocko Fuel products at a 10% discount by using the code SPORTSDOCS at checkout. That's SPORTSDOCS at checkout. Find Jocko Greens and more. I happen to like their Jocko Milk Protein Shakes by going to www.jockofuel.com. Our second poster is titled Management of Meniscal Tears, Cost and Timing of Surgery, and was presented by Liz Matzkin and her team at Mass General Brigham. We actually had Dr. Matzkin on our podcast back in April of 2021 to discuss the treatment of different meniscus injuries. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, you should definitely check it out. The purpose of this new study was to describe the costs associated with treatment of meniscus tears in the two-year period following diagnosis and examine the relationship between patient characteristics and timing of surgery.
They divided patients into non-surgical, early surgery performed within 3 months of diagnosis, and late surgery beyond 3 months. They found that costs were significantly lower in the non-surgical group, but the highest costs were associated with late surgery, advocating for surgery to be performed earlier. The authors also reported that higher utilization of physical therapy and medication in the three-month period post-diagnosis was also associated with a reduced likelihood of eventual surgery.
So, Brian, we're all concerned about costs nowadays. What are your thoughts on this poster? What are your takeaways?
To unpack here, and some of which we may not be able to fully delineate, but I think that this, first off, a couple of things that I'd ask to the authors is, one, how is a diagnosis made? You know, the time zero in this study is indeterminate. If that's represented in an insurance database, how long have they had antecedent symptoms for? So I think it's hard to establish that time zero. Two is what type of tears. Obviously, they allude to the bucket handle tear as being a negative prognostic indicator for non-operative measures. I also want to know the presence of mechanical symptoms. I think all those are important variables to utilize when you interpret this data. With that said, I think a lot of this stuff makes sense. The buckets, they don't do well, right, with non-operative care, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. I think looking at lateral meniscal pathology, I think on average that tends to be a little bit more symptomatic, especially with those small perimeniscal cysts that can often happen. I really like the public service announcement that PT decreases your likelihood of requiring secondary surgery. So I think it's important for us to realize that a judicious course, maybe 6 weeks of PT, if somebody comes in with a non-locked knee without frank mechanical symptoms, they could benefit from an injection with or without PT.
I think that's really important. A lot of my patients will scoff at PT. That's how I work out. I don't need PT. And I think you can show them this study and show them they can actually potentially avoid surgery and lower costs for themselves as well as the healthcare system. So I think that's very important. So then would this change your practice with regards to surgical indications? You mentioned, you know, the bucket handle, most people were treating that surgically, lateral meniscus tears being more symptomatic. Age older than 40 years and male sex, would that lead you to counsel people differently or pretty much firm in your indications?
I think any variable you take in isolation is probably not going to give you the complete picture. So I'll probably take a more holistic approach to preoperative counseling. I think the age makes sense because they err on the side of the more degenerative type. I think we got to be careful not to build up arthroscopic partial meniscectomy as being the panacea for all that ails you. We know that there's downstream consequences from meniscal resection, particularly laterally, but also medially, and patients may exchange one problem for another. There's one thing you mentioned earlier that I was going to pick up on. Yes. So the delayed section was also, I think, an important time point. I think what this tells me is, much like ACL tears, maybe we shouldn't delay treatment too much for these individuals that are obvious non-early responders. And so this may be the case where biting the bullet early, undergoing that partial meniscal debridement or repair would be beneficial, especially if you're doing repair.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So I think Brian makes some really good points, and it's really important that we think about all these things associated with cost, as well as, you know, how they're doing clinically when we make these decisions. So Ashley, what are your thoughts? You know, are you, you know, changing your practice based on this poster, or, you know, how did you feel about the abstract results?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting poster, and I definitely think it makes you want to follow an algorithm when it comes to treatment of meniscus injuries. This definitely won't make me turn away from initial non-operative treatment. I think there are a lot of patients that can do very well without surgery for meniscus tears, and I think to move aggressively towards surgery would do a disservice to our patient population. But I think that keeping an eye on how long that non-operative treatment is going on, and how much you're doing in that non-operative treatment realm, potentially if a patient isn't doing well with that, kind of dragging that along, this poster highlights that we shouldn't be doing that. So I do tend to do cortisone injections, one, for meniscus tears, and then I send them all to PT. I think making sure they're seeing a good physical therapist, they're doing the right therapy, taking their anti-inflammatories, avoiding provoking activities like athletics or running while they're rehabbing, things like that before you declare a failure of non-op treatment. But if they don't do well, I think after about a month or two, I think rather than dragging it out, talking about doing something surgical really is the right move. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I tend to sort of walk people through almost like a spectrum or a menu of options. And unless they have something that is a little bit more urgent, like a bucket handle tear, or they're young and it's a very fixable sort of type tear that I might sort of encourage them to address. I think I always sort of talk to them about activity modification, making sure that they are attached with a good physical therapist, because we know that, you know, that can really vary. So making sure that they have a good partnership there and it's a good match for them. And I think, you know, the one thing the authors also found were the other factors that were associated with increased likelihood of early surgery were the males, age over 40, bucket handle tear and lateral meniscus tear. The one that I was more surprised by was age over 40.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm not sure if that just, you know, if that was a product of them just sort of sometimes being like, this is what I want, and the patient sort of being a little bit more direct. But, you know, that's one I think, you know, similar to we talked about before, when you have a poster, you don't always get the full story.
Yeah.
You don't get the discussion from the authors. So age over 40 is probably the one that surprised me. What about you?
I completely agree. The bucket handle tear and lateral meniscus tear did not surprise me. I think most surgeons with a bucket handle tear, especially with a locked knee, are talking about doing something surgical sooner rather than later. And lateral meniscus tears, especially in younger individuals, if there's any possibility of repair, you really want to get to those soon and give that patient the best chance of having a repair of their meniscus and preserving, especially the lateral meniscus. I agree. Age over 40, I don't have a good explanation for that. And I'm excited to see their breakdown in their paper as to kind of how that ended up.
Yeah, I think the only other thing that I would sort of be curious to know about was if they have any concomitant sort of cartilage, not, you know, big cartilage injuries where you're talking about like an OATS or an OCA. But the one thing I sort of feel like if someone does have a little bit of a chondral flap and they kind of get in that cycle where they're stuck with effusions and they try and do physical therapy, but their quad kind of keeps getting inhibited, I would sort of say that's probably another one that if they have a lot of cartilage sort of flaps or chondral flaps that you can sort of identify in the MRI, that's one. And I'm less likely to believe that they're going to do well conservatively. Not that I'm, you know, I'm always going to offer them the chance to make that decision for themselves. But I think that's another factor that comes into play.
Something I think that's really important that you pointed out is MRI findings that suggest a poor prognosis with non-operative treatment rather than waste time, talking about doing surgery timely. And you talked about the cartilage flaps, but another one I often talk with patients about is displaced meniscus tears, not necessarily bucket handle, but those that are flipped out into the meniscotibial gutter, particularly medially. They press on the MCL, they cause a lot of pain. And these are patients that I see do a cortisone injection. They have no relief because it's not really the pain inside that, tibiofemoral articulation. It's more the pain from the proprioceptive nerve fibers from the MCL. And so these are patients I say, maybe try some PT and anti-inflammatory, but you're probably going to end up needing a surgery and we shouldn't waste too much time.
Yeah, I agree. I think that makes a lot of sense. So pretty straightforward study, but always really important to pay attention to costs and our part in them. And, you know, by sort of delaying something that is really the inevitable, it's really going to impact the overall cost of healthcare.
Thank you for listening to this mini episode of the Sports Docs. We hope you enjoyed the discussion as much as we did. On the next mini episode, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Brian Waterman and shift our focus to the addition of a lateral extra-articular tenodesis to pediatric ACL reconstructions. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to stay up to date on all things sports medicine. If you like what you hear, please consider leaving us a review. You can also reach us by email at thesportsdocspod@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at thesportsdocspod. We love your feedback.